Welcome to Gracious Words. Gracious Words is taken from the weekly women's Bible study taught by Cheryl Broderson at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.
We behold your glory, God, in the face of Christ. It shows us who you are, revealing who you are.
Have you ever felt like something is missing from your life? Barrenness can take many forms, but there is only one true solution, God. God is for you, and as you seek Him, He will bring fruitfulness to the barren places in your life.
We will come before you, Lord, in wonder, wonder. We will fall on our knees and surrender. We surrender to you.
And now here is part three of Cheryl's message titled, A Tale of Two Sisters.
Mandragora officinarum is a stemless perennial root in the potato family, because you want to know this. Its shape and pungent fragrance may be the origin of its use in fertility rites and as an aphrodisiac. It has dark green wrinkled leaves. This is so you can recognize it if you see it in your yard. From which rise a violet bell-shaped flower. So we're on the lookout. Its fruit is a yellowish berry, approximately the size of a small tomato, which can be consumed, just in case you're hungry, you want something extra for your salad. The mandrake is native to the Mediterranean region, but not common in Mesopotamia. Now you know. Now you know. Now you can go home. You know. Rachel believes that if she has this fruit, this is the cause of the barrenness. First, Jacob's the cause. Then she tries the surrogates. Now, if she has this aphrodisiac, this will make all the difference. This is the remedy. This is the solution for her barrenness. And it doesn't work. Instead, what happens? Leah gets a night with Jacob, and she gets pregnant, and she conceives three more times. Finally, after Leah has three more children, so it's 7-0, Rachel, we're told that God remembered or was mindful of Rachel. Interestingly enough, Sarah, Rebecca, and Rachel were all described in the Bible as beautiful. And yet all three women were described as barren. God used Sarah's barrenness to bring out a covenant child, to arrest Abraham and Sarah's attention on the miraculous, on the singularity of this son, of this covenant son. God used Rebecca's barrenness to get Isaac praying and Rebecca to seek him concerning her pregnancy and the sons she would give birth to. But Rachel's barrenness did not result in any special revelation from God of a covenant son or a special work. Rachel has what we might call a user relationship with God. She pleads for God for a child. There are some people who this is what their relationship with God is like. It's, God, give me what I want. God, give me what I need, rather than, God, give me you. When Rachel has a son, she names this son Joseph, saying, God will give me another. The name Joseph, don't get upset if you named your son Joseph or if you named your daughter Rachel. This is unpopular with people of those names, this Bible study. Joseph means, I want another one, or not enough, insufficient, discontent. Later, we'll read next week in Genesis 31, 34, where Rachel steals her father's idols and lies about it, jeopardizing Jacob, trying to get some inheritance from her father by stealing. Idols were not only images to other gods, idolatry, but they also represented land rights. And they were usually made of silver or gold as to have value. You see, Rachel is still seeking natural advantages. When Rachel gives birth to a second son, this will be in Genesis 35, she names him Benoni, or son of my sorrow, or the son that killed me, the son that cursed me. Such a name would be a curse on the child and a constant reminder that he had caused his mother's death. She's, because of her own self-centeredness, in her death, she's bringing a curse to her son. Jacob intervenes, and this is the only child he names. And he changes the name from Benoni to Benjamin, strength of my right hand. Now, Leah has all the disadvantages. She's weak-eyed, whatever that means to you. She's pawned off by her father. She is married by pretending to be someone else. She is unloved. She's unwanted. Her sister is jealous of her. And she's in an emotionally unhealthy atmosphere. Yet, the names of Leah's children reveal much about what was going on in her heart and life. The name Reuben, seen, is justified as God has seen my affliction. God knows what I'm going through. The name Reuben is hearing, or God has heard my prayers. These names are reminiscent of what Hagar realized. Hagar, who had all the disadvantages. She was the bondservant. She was taken advantage of. Sarah treated her cruelly. But when she ran away, God spoke to her and told her she would give birth to a son, Ishmael. And she named the well where God met her El Roy, or you are the God that sees, Genesis 16:42, and she named her son Ishmael, or God hears. These are the very attributes that Leah acknowledges. The Lord surely looked on my affliction. The Lord has heard that I am unloved. Her third son is named Attached, Levi, speaking of a hope that will not be fulfilled. Her fourth son is named Judah, or praise. At this time in her life, she stops conceiving, which could mean that Jacob is not coming into her anymore now that he's got Bilhah and Rachel. He's a little busy. Leah then offers her maid Zilpah to Jacob. In offering their maid, that, in the Eastern culture, this was something beneficent. Remember, Sarah did it for Abraham, that Abraham might have a covenant son. They think they're doing something that honors their husband because their goal is to give their husband as many sons as possible. We would slap our husband silly if they tried this. It's like you want to just put over this, don't try this at home or anyplace else. Zilpah, like Bilhah, these are names we should all remember, has two sons that Leah names Gad, or a troop comes. It means strength or blessing. Asher means blessed or happy. They have nothing to do with Rachel. They're not, take this Rachel, look at this Rachel. These only have to do with Leah's relationship to God. Then after the mandrake incident, it is Leah, not Rachel, who conceives. Now she bears two more sons and a daughter, Issachar. God has given me my hire, or God has rewarded me. God has blessed me. Zebulun, God has endowed me with the good endowment. And then Dinah, God has been right in his judgment, or God has been good. Though Leah is the disadvantage, she turned her attention to God. You see, disadvantages, when given to God, can become advantages because we realize, one, that this world has nothing to offer us. that we will not find our value in this world. I don't think there's anything better than that. I think that happened to me sometime in my 50s. And in my 50s, it was like, wow, my daughters get all the attention now. You know, people rush to bag their groceries. And they're like, you can do it yourself. I hope you brought your own bags. But it has a way of turning our attention heavenward to the one who will be our guide even into our old age, who loves us just as much as he loved us when we were young and vibrant. That we are more important than sparrows, Matthew 10:29-31. That we, no matter what our age, no matter what we look like, no matter what our physical shape, that we have all been redeemed by the precious blood of Jesus, the greatest, most valuable commodity of all time, all place, all people, and in the entire world, was shed for each of us. 1 Peter 1:18-19. Leah's value came from God's attention to her and on her. Jeremiah 9:23-24 says, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom. Let not the mighty man glory in his might, nor let the rich man glory in his riches. But let him who glories glory in this, that he understands and knows me, the Lord, that I am the Lord who exercises loving kindness, judgment, and righteousness in the earth. For in these I delight. The Lord said, here's your value. It's not in wealth. It's not in wisdom. It's in understanding and knowing me. And this is what gives us value. When we understand and know that the Lord exercises loving kindness, good judgment, and righteousness in the earth. This is what Leah progressively came to know about God. God saw that Leah was unloved. God opened Leah's womb and made her fruitful. From these names, we see the progressive revelation about God that Leah received. God saw her affliction, knew her emotional turmoil. God heard her. God was with her. She learned to praise God, to find her contentment in God. God gave her strength. God brought her happiness. God rewarded her. God blessed her. God was good to her. What she was saying with these names is, God cares about me. You see, God doesn't use the criteria of culture. We learned that last week when God did not take the culture of the Canaanites to honor the firstborn, the first out of the womb, or honor the hunter, the stronger one, the one who got for himself. God's criteria is not the culture of men. It's not the criteria of this world. God blesses those who seek him in their disadvantages. Isn't it often our very disadvantages that brought us to Jesus? I know that for me, even though I was raised in a Christian home, it wasn't until my first year of college when everything went wrong for me. Everything went wrong for me. And I realized that my ways and my thinking was just making my life amok, terrible. That I came to the Lord and said, Lord, I need you. I don't like myself. I don't like what I've done with my life so far. I need you. I need you. Okay, I give up on my way. I'll do whatever you want. I'll do it your way because this is terrible. I came because of the disadvantages to Jesus. It drove me to Jesus. The plight of these two sisters mirrored the struggle between Laban and Jacob. Laban has all the advantages. Jacob is in Laban's hometown. Laban owns the livestock and can set the conditions. Jacob has nothing but wives and children. Jacob is dependent on the wages that Laban gives him. But yet, Jacob with the disadvantages has the greatest advantage of all, because he has a gracious God who is for him and has vowed to bless him. At the end of these chapters, we realize that physical, material, social, financial, and whatever other advantages the world has to offer can still leave a person barren and discontent. What is barrenness? It's that gnawing emptiness that somehow, no matter what I've done, no matter what I have, I'm still not happy. I remember meeting a woman I knew who had two adorable daughters and a son and a husband that absolutely adored her, who was very wealthy. And I met her at the mall, and she's with a different man. And I said to her, "Hey, what's going on?" Because they were a little cozy. And she said, "I'm just in a search for myself. I just have to find myself because I'm just not happy." And I said, "And you think you're going to find it with, I don't know your name, what's your name? Todd?" And I said, "No offense, Todd. But you think Todd, no, he's just one of several men that I've been dating. I just need to stop this nine." And I looked at her and I said, "This is not the way." I said, "I know the way, and it's only God." God puts, I did the whole thing. There's a emptiness in your soul, and it's God-shaped. And only when you seek the Lord will that gnawing barrenness and discontent be filled. And she said, "Oh, thank you very much." True contentment, purpose, and fruitfulness come from one awareness of who God is. It starts there. He's loving kindness. He's compassion. He's righteousness. He's a good judge. But also from God's personal compassion and concern for you. Unless it becomes personal, you won't feel that fruitfulness, that contentment. And finally, it's not till you're attached to God, not anything of this world, not Jacob's or the Jacobs of life. No attachment to them will take away the barrenness. It's the attachment to God, the relationship to God, the God who is loving kindness, the God who gave his son for you to bring you into blessing, the God who cares for you. Perhaps you feel disadvantaged. Perhaps you can say, "Cheryl, if we're going to start talking insecurities and disadvantages, do you have 3 hours? And the answer is no, but God does. God has all the time you need. Take heart, because God is drawn to you right now. God is attracted to the neediest person in this room. Whoever's got the most disadvantages wins right now. That's the person right now that God is the most attracted to. In Capernaum, when they wanted to entrap Jesus, they brought the neediest man into the middle of the synagogue, a man with a withered hand, and they put him in the center of the room where Jesus could not miss. They knew something about Jesus that we often forget. They knew that Jesus could not resist need. They knew that even though it was the Sabbath, and even though they were disapproving, and even though it could bring their ire and condemnation, and it would look to them like Jesus was breaking the law, they knew that Jesus could not resist need, that he would heal this man with a withered hand, that he would not allow that man to come into his presence and leave in the same condition. We're told in Mark chapter 3 that Jesus looked around and he was angry at those men because of the hardness of their heart, that they did not have any compassion for this man or his need. And then Jesus said, Which of you that had an animal that fell into a pit wouldn't go and save that animal? And yet you have no compassion for this man, the son of Abraham. Then Jesus looked at this man and said, stretch out that hand. And the man stretched it out and it was whole, just like the other one. Jesus is attracted to disadvantage and to need. If you have ever felt barren, and that barrenness takes many forms, something is missing from your life. Others have something that you don't. Maybe, you know, a husband that actually brings coffee. Somebody was telling me the story, actually Glenda was telling me today, that she saw an interchange between my mother and father where my, or she heard about her, and my mother told her where she said, my mom said, where's my Valentine? And my dad said, I don't know, did you send it? In other words, he thought she was saying, where's the Valentine I sent you? Take your eyes off of others. Take your eyes off of others. Don't compare yourself with others. The Bible says they that compare themselves among themselves are not wise. Don't compare. Don't compare. Don't blame. Don't blame. Don't blame others for your barrenness. Don't say, well, it's this person or that person. If they had done this or if they had done that. Don't look for substitutions or ways to make yourself fruitful. Don't look to folklore or remedies or the methodologies of this world. Don't look to riches or your rights, but seek the Lord. Seek the Lord, because barrenness is something only God can remedy. Barrenness is something only God can change. But knowing God makes all the difference in our life between contentment or discontentment, between sorrow or joy, between barrenness or fruitfulness. It's God. It's God. God is for you. And if you seek God, He will bring fruitfulness to your life, because this is what He does. He said in John 15, if you abide in me, you will bear fruit. If you abide, that's the remedy for barrenness, is abiding in Jesus. You see, the object is not Jacob. The object is not Leah. The objective is not to have as many children or even fruit for that matter. Our objective is abiding, and our object is Jesus. And when we abide in Jesus, it doesn't matter what disadvantages you have. It doesn't matter, because Jesus is the one who will bring fruit to your life. In fact, in the Bible, it says, and the barren has become the mother of many children because of Jesus. Jesus, abide in Jesus, and not you might bear fruit, but you will bear fruit.
Barrenness is something only God can change. Rachel sought to use Jacob and mandrakes as a remedy to her situation, but they couldn't change it. Only God could. He makes all the difference in our lives between contentment and discontentment, between sorrow and joy, and between barrenness and fruitfulness. It's God who makes all the difference. Remember, God is for you, and if you seek Him, He will bring fruitfulness to your life, because this is what He does. As Jesus said in John, if you abide in me, I will abide in you, and you will bear much fruit. That's the remedy for barrenness, abiding in Jesus. We hope you have been blessed by today's Bible study. For more information about the Gracious Words radio program and the teaching ministry of Cheryl Broderson, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. Coming up next time on the Gracious Words program, we'll look at Jacob's departure from Laban as we continue our series, Our Great Creator, in the book of Genesis with Cheryl Broderson. We do hope you make plans to join us. Again, for more information, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.